Welcome back to the Digital Village here on KPFK Los Angeles, 90.7 FM.
98.7 FM in Santa Barbara and streaming around the galaxy from kpfk.org. Well, that one rhymed.
My name is Doran Behrens.
My name is Rick Allen, and we are joined by, a couple of guys that we've had on before.
We're rejoined by Orv Beach and Gareth Greenaway. Orv is the marketing chair, and Gareth is the community chair, I think you said, for the Southern California Linux Annual Linux Expo, which is coming up this next week, I believe.
Yeah, February 11th and 12th.
Welcome.
Where is it?
It's at the LAX Radisson on Century Boulevard.
Well, what a difference a year makes. I've been going, I'm not going this year, but I've been going for a couple of years. I'm sorry.
Disclaimer.
But what a difference it's made over the last couple of years, because this year you guys have really hit the mainstream, it seems. You're getting press all over the place, and I understand the ticket sales are really taking off.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. This is the fourth annual scale, and we're getting a reputation as a quality local computer show. And it's getting easier and easier to attract quality speakers and quality exhibitors. And as a result, it's getting easier to get free press. And I'd like also, by the way, thank you guys for having us on here. I really appreciate it.
Just remember, we did it first.
That's right. Well, and we'll hold you to that.
We'll cover the expo here in a little bit because there's lots to talk about. But there's also been a lot going on in the open source community, and that's something as much as we're interested in it here, we don't get to talk about enough. Let's just start off, if I could, asking about a couple of the things that are happening in the Linux and open source areas. One thing I've noticed is since Red Hat has kind of moved on to the new pricing structure with their Enterprise Edition, and they've got their Fedora, which has become their free version of Linux. I've noticed a plethora of other distributions becoming popular. I'm wondering if you've, and included in that, never mind, I should mention, is Novell buying a whole distribution for themselves, SUSE. So I'm just wondering, originally, your first thoughts on this development of the distributions. Is that a good thing? Are you glad to see that? Are you seeing anything in particular that you like or dislike about all that?
I guess I'll take that one. There have been a lot of new distributions popping up, and what's really interesting is the focuses that they're taking. There's a lot of new, really desktop-oriented distributions that are really like going after like the new users, making it easier for them to install. You mentioned Fedora. There's also like a couple new ones that have popped up, Ubuntu, and then KUbuntu.
A lot of press for Ubuntu. I've seen a lot of press on.
Yeah. In answer to your question, whether or not it's a good thing, I think it is a really good thing.
Isn't there a fear of fragmentation or some kind of forking that's going to be involved? I know there's a lot of licensing questions that are going on. I'm wondering, are those all going to be resolved, or are we just going to have a bunch of little, you know, distributions happening with small audiences each?
The interesting thing about, like, you mentioned the forking problem is when the distributions break up and they start doing their own thing, there is a lot of communication back and forth. They do share things back and forth. I think Orv had something to say about that.
Yeah, that's the genius behind the open source license. Yes, you can split off or fork, as they call it, and develop your own distribution, but if you come up with a really fancy offshoot of a popular applications, it's available out there in open source, and it gets sucked into all the other distributions. So that tends to discourage forking, and it keeps all of the base code and the applications fairly common. What's different in the distributions is which software they decide to include it in a distribution. And the other thing is package management, the way they install and maintain packages. Those are the main differences. But from the end user point of view, the mousy clicky thing you see on the screen is the same from distribution to distribution.
And even the package management, I mean, the two major, I mean, there's a lot of different package management tools and stuff out there, but there's really only two major or two popular ones that most of the distributions are using.
That's RPM and apt-get, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I The RPM is made popular by Red Hat, and I just recently saw the Debian using their net version, where it's a very small download. You put in a CD rather than having 5 or 6 or 7 CDs that you have to swap out. You just do it over the internet, and I found that very easy.
Mm-hmm.
They have the aptitude management, where you can get in and manage your updates and all that kind of stuff, and I found it very easy. In the past, which is old school, whatever, 5 or more years ago, it was a lot more difficult when you had to manage those things and you didn't have those package managers. So I think they've spent a lot of effort on that. It's paying off.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of, one of the things that a lot of the distributions are really focusing on now. Now that all the tools are there and all the applications are very usable, is they're focusing on making the actual install very easy. Fedora and Ubuntu and Kubuntu really focus on making that install so that a new user can take that CD, put it in their computer, and go through like a guided process of and have an up and running Linux system.
The whole
fairly simple
grail of grandma, having grandma
exactly.
be able to install it by herself.
Well, and that's kind of what people ask me. I get a lot of that when we talk about Linux, and they say, okay, so how. What exactly, maybe you can just kind of explain it to the listeners that, eyes are starting to glaze over at this point, or ears in our case, because we're in radio. Explain to, because they say, is it usable like a Mac? Is it usable like a PC? I'm just so confused. It just seems everything over my head. What can you put on the screen so that I can use it like I'm used to using the old?
Well, that's an easy one to answer. You spend all your time in the applications. I mean, nobody uses an operating system. Face
right.
it. That should be like plumbing. And if they're intimidated with it, just tell them, well, use Firefox. It's available on both Windows and Linux, so that's an easy move. And if you're already using OpenOffice on Windows, it's available on Linux. Those are the two big applications.
OpenOffice is the open source version of the Office suite made popular by Microsoft. The OpenOffice one's been really been developed a lot over the last couple of years since Sun kind of took over the development of that whole area. And it's been. I know a couple of people who have now made the switch, and I know a couple of companies that are seriously considering, given the price to license Microsoft Office, and that OpenOffice is available and reads the same formats as Microsoft Office of files. I found a lot of people are becoming more and more enamored with that app.
Well, the price sure isn't an inhibiting factor, that's for sure. It can be downloaded for free. The way that
works, doesn't crash the system anymore like it used to.
It's pretty darn stable. Version 2.0.1 is the latest version. Since the original 1.whatever versions, they've added a lot of features, fixed a lot of bugs. PDF export is built in, which is a nice factor. Mm-hmm. Flash export? I think it can export Flash also.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's nice.
And read and write Microsoft Office files, certainly. The native file format, this is something maybe we can segue into. They've settled on a standard format called the Open Document format, and this is now an ISO standard.
We've mentioned it a couple of times here
right.
in the context of Massachusetts and their decision to migrate to that format.
Right, and do you want to talk about ODF?
Yeah. One of the events that we planned this year, just kind of segueing into our expo, is a workshop that's taking place on Friday the 10th. It's an Open Document workshop, where we have some prominent members of the Open Document Fellowship coming to speak, as well as industry leaders that are really getting behind Open Document, like Sun and IBM, to kind of like talk to. We've invited all the local California state and local government officials to come and hear what Open Document is all about and why they should be using it.
Since we're here in California, what is the reception that you've been hearing from the state officials regarding
the reception that? Has been really good, actually. I think one of our guys that's been kind of really organizing it heard a couple months ago, basically, I believe it was a mandate from Governor Schwarzenegger telling his officials, okay, you have to look into seriously using Open Document because of the cost, because of the openness of it.
Right. I've been hearing more and more of that from both public and private institutions, this consideration. They want to have the compatibility with existing formats, but they want to be able to continue forward without having to be dependent on some private company supporting it in the future.
And where do you end up if that format is no longer supported? For instance, go back and read your old WordStar files with Microsoft Word? I don't think so.
My 5-inch floppy disk.
Yes, or 8-inch.
I can't read my old Microsoft Word with new Microsoft Word.
It's a real issue for a government organization or, like in my case, a hospital that has to be guaranteed the ability to go back and read old electronic documents. They want a standard that will not change going forward, and that is a published, open, non-patent inhibited, impaired, you know what I mean, a standard that every application that supports it can read it. For instance, one of the application suites we don't talk about too much is KOffice. It's the KDE version of OpenOffice. They've moved to ODF. So anything created in KOffice can be read in OpenOffice. It's a common file format.
There's also
a good
thing. The standalone word processor, not a full Office suite, but the standalone word processor, Abbey Word, which is available
around a long time.
It's been around for, I think it even might even predate OpenOffice.
In my experience, it does, yeah.
But it's available on both OS X, Linux, and Windows, and moving towards supporting OpenOffice, OpenOffice document, too.
If we could take just a quick moment to remind our listeners that you're listening to Digital Village here on KPFK Los Angeles, 90.7 FM.
98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and around the globe at kpfk.org. My name is Rick Allen.
My name is Lauren Barron.
We are joined by Orv Beach and Gareth Greenaway from the Linux...
The Southern California Annual Linux Expo.
Annual. How many years now?
4 years.
There we go.
And, you wanted to say something about what we were
just get back to Rick's question about the confusion about how do I install Linux? Well, if you're already using the applications you're familiar with on Windows, it's a pretty easy process to slide a new operating system underneath it. I mean, all the applications will be familiar. The data files would be compatible since it's the same application. It's become a lot easier.
Well, one of the beautiful things that have become available over the last year or so are these little CD distributions.
Live CDs, yeah.
Nopix is a very famous one, where if you just want to get a flavor of what it looks like, it's actually a usable version that runs entirely off of a bootable CD. You download it, you transfer it to the CD, you reboot your computer with it in the drive, and up comes Linux. A limited version with limited number of applications, but it's fully usable, and you can browse the internet if you want to, and all that kind of stuff. And I find that's a really wonderful way to introduce people to just the experience of it.
Yeah.
Well, and there's lots of specialized other distributions that I like as well.
The most well-known, I mean, you mentioned that Canopix actually includes Firefox and OpenOffice, and like a lot of the open source applications that people would be looking for.
I want to talk about the expo, but before we do, just while we're on the subject, I want to just mention the desktops. You mentioned KGE. There's also the GNOME desktop, which is also popular. There seems to be some, as always, it's always been this way, a tension between the two, as well as some others. But I'm wondering, do you see the KGE seems to be really... I always think it's going to die off, and it never does. And they continue to develop new apps and refine their older ones. Do you see anything happening in the desktop with regard to one taking over, or are they still going to be battling about? Do you think?
I don't think one will ever take over. I mean, that's one of the really good things about open source desktops is you have that choice to use whatever you want. I mean, there's literally like thousands.
Some people complain about too many choices, but I find that because, like you say, Orb, it's the app, and in the end, it's the app that you use.
Right.
So whatever works for you as a user, if you like Philly borders, if you like round windows, if you like the straight, you know, old style classic Windows look, whatever suits you, as long as the app is productive for you. I always like that idea, and I'm mystified by people who want us to get to a standardized single way of looking at things.
Well, those are probably the people who consider a computer as an appliance, and it's not. It's a very flexible, complicated tool, and you have to invest the time to learn how to use that tool.
Yeah, and even if you I don't want to scare people away if what you're used to is browsing on the internet and writing letters to mom. You don't have to learn how to do everything that the computer is capable of.
That's right. You don't have to learn how to install antivirus software or defragging software or reinstall your operating system every few months.
That you don't have to do. The virus stuff is coming along. I don't know. We can talk about that later.
It is interesting here at KPFK. We have a place where volunteers can use the computers now, and so many of them I'm surprised at how they can barely use the equipment as it is. They haven't had the basic knowledge. That could be a good thing for Linux, in that if they're first using Linux platforms, then that would be a good introduction, because they don't know the PC or the Windows basis in the first place.
Yeah. And beyond the standard apps of browsers and word processors and email, you have things like the GIMP. The image processing, you have Audacity and other audio processing. It's a very robust and growing number of applications. We are running out of time. We've got about 5 minutes, and I can't let you guys go, obviously, talking about the expo that's coming up. Once again, tell people when is it and where is it, and then let's give an idea of what kind of workshops and speakers you have planned.
Well, for those people that are interested in attending the Open Document Fellowship Workshop, that's on Friday the 10th. It's a free event for anyone who wants to attend and come and help hear and support Open Document. You just have to email us at odf@socallinuxexpo.org to register. The actual expo is February 11th and 12th, like I said, at the LAX Radisson.
Is there a cost?
There is a cost, and we actually have a special discount code for Digital Village listeners. They go to our website and order a ticket and use the D as in digital, V as in village code. They'll get a 40% off discount on full access passes.
Isn't that nice of them?
That
right?
is nice.
What's the website again for people who want to find out more about the expo?
SoCalLinuxExpo.org.
Okay. We have a link for that from our own website right now. You're going to have the Open Document Fellowship meeting
on Friday.
On Friday. What other kind of conferences or meetings are you going to have?
On Saturday and Sunday, we have I have it here in front of me.
Well, there's four conference tracks on both Saturday and Sunday. Packed full of speakers on various open source.
Well, let's talk about the speakers, because
we mentioned KDE. We actually have one of the main developers of KDE, Aaron Saijo, who's coming to talk about like the new advances in KDE 4 and their new Plasma desktop. We have Chris DeBona, who works at Google.
Oh, really?
We have John Terpstra, one of the major Samba developers.
Well, Chris DeBona is worth it, just if no one else.
He's a really good speaker. We have Hans Reiser, who is behind the Reiser file system.
The new RFS gained a lot of popularity for Linux. You also have Mr. Quill, I believe, who was the...
Mr. Quinn?
Quinn, I'm sorry, who was the former CIO of the state of Massachusetts.
Yeah, he'll actually be keynoting at the ODF event on Friday.
And he was the one who was promoting the ODF, or seen as promoting the ODF format in the state of Massachusetts.
Yes.
This is the guy that the California state government officials should be listening to.
Definitely.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what he has to say about his... long and twisted journey through this whole notion of open formats. How many exhibitors are you going to be having?
We have 52 exhibitors.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Boy, then that's up quite a bit from the last
couple. We had 39 last year, so we're growing.
Good. And what kind of new things are you expecting to see? Are they going to be showing off? I'm assuming it's going to be a wide range of both hardware and software. Am I right?
We'll have IBM will be there.
Really?
They're actually one of our – they've been a steady sponsor of Scale for 4 years now.
Novell will be there.
Both of them will be. While we mentioned IBM and Novell, what do you think about the influx of money and interest from the big corporations in open source software and free software?
From those two, I think it's a good thing. I mean, there has been a lot of companies in the past that have kind of tried to jump on the Linux and open source bandwagon and like thrown money at it, but they've never really, in my opinion, truly believed in what it's all about. Whereas as IBM and Novell, I really think they get it. I think they're in it for the long run.
There is and this is nothing new. It's from the very beginning of the whole Free Software Foundation's launch back those many years. The difference between the free beer and the free speech issue.
Speech, right.
When they talk about free, a lot of companies see dollar signs rather than approaching it from the liberty aspect of it and the freedom to share and tinker, as Professor Felton likes to say, to be able to get in the guts of things and look at how things are done and be able to modify them.
Yeah, the company that really gets open source understands it's all about risk management. You have control over that application. You're not at risk of a vendor abandoning an application you've been dependent on for years. You have control over your destiny. So it's the risk management for the companies that get it.
Okay. And I know it's kind of late for this philosophical question, but how much do you see the open source movement as actually being emblematic of the kind of thing that's going on? It's still an underground movement in America. How much do you see that as actually growing and more people embracing that movement, not only technical but in other aspects of say even political life in America?
That's a little philosophy for you.
Well, you called it underground, but open source adoption maybe lags a little bit here in the U.S. compared to outside the U.S.
Right.
Because of Microsoft's toehold. There's a downright suspicion of Microsoft and their relatively expensive products in foreign countries. So the uptake of open source software in those countries is very, 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 very high. And I'm a little worried about it, not in a bad sense, but all of those Africans who are learning open source software with a full suite of programming tools, you will see hotspots of programming knowledge. And if we don't have the equivalent tools widely spread in the U.S., we could fall behind in competition.
Well, I think that's an important point, especially
exactly. That's what I wanted to hear you say. Okay.
you combine that with things like the $100 laptop that Nicholas Negroponte is distributing that runs a version of Linux. You put that in the hands of a few million kids and let them hack away at it. Who knows what we're going to come up with in a year or two or five?
And if it's open source, everybody has access to it.
Beautiful.
Great having you guys come down. Once again, the Southern California Linux Expo, it's next Saturday and Sunday, but there's other stuff on Friday. So check out their website. Tell again the website.
SoCalLinuxExpo.org.
That's SoCalLinux.org. Or you can visit our own website and find out. And it's at the Radisson, and all the info you want. And if they want a discount, Digital Village listeners can enter in the code D as in digital and V as in village to get that. So pretty cool. Okay, that's it for this week's edition of Digital Village. If you want to write us, my email address is doran@pacifist.net. I'll forward everything on to Rick.
And you can check out our website, digitalvillage.org, where you will find MP3 archives and podcasts of this show.
Until next week, thanks to Jazz and Master Control, my name is Doran Behrens.
My name is Rick Allen. We'll see you online.